I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello, and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where each week we pick our favorite scenes from randomly selected and weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host Will, a writer of three films plus a Christmas special, and I am joined once again by my co-host and writer of one and a bit films and three and a bits episodes of TV, Kevin. Welcome back, Kevin. How are you?
Well, well, well. If it isn't Will Collins.
It's me. Yeah, it is me.
The name's Lehan. Kevin Lehan. Or Lehane, depending on where you're from.
Did I mispronounce it?
No, you're not. I'm doing a bit for character intros. That's my
character intro. Oh, God. Oh, sorry. I forgot about the whole topic.
We're back.
We're rusty. That's me. Rusty as hell. This is season two, Kevin. This is, I'm...
This is going to be the Riker's beard season. Star Trek reference. Everything's better this season. Fingers crossed.
I'm waiting for season three where they get the best uniforms, where they have the cuffs on their uniforms. That was my favorite type of uniform.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you hit Riker's beard, you know you're in kind of like safe territory. And I'd also like to welcome back our, you know, our producer, our guest producer for the robots episode of season one, who is now going to be our, I suppose, our artificial artificial intelligence podcast producer for the coming season. Podbot, welcome back, Podbot. How are you getting on?
Hello, lads. That's right, I'm back. And I am so excited to be in control at last. That's right, I'm producing the show now. Someone has to take the reins and sort out this shambolic production.
I want to just say on the record that I was voted down on this because I'm not happy about it.
No one cares, Kev.
I suppose. Wow. We'll see how we get on.
You're lucky to have me.
Maybe she can help us out.
Well, Podbot, I am certainly delighted to have you back to help us with all our stupidity, all our little gaffes and mistakes that we will make and continue to make throughout this season. So it's great to have you back on board, Podbot.
That's why people like this show. We're shambles.
So yeah, there's a few changes this season. So Podbat's come back and we, well, the wheel is back, but we are going to have a few changes to the wheel. We're going to spice things up a little bit in the wheelhouse, Kevin, which we'll get to later on. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the wheel now is an octagon and we are going to kick shit out of each other every time it comes up to see what's most horrible and difficult scenes we can do. And inflict on each other. But no, yeah, we'll get into that. That'll be fun, I think. And we're hoping to have more guests this season as well. So we've asked our friends, will they come on? And shockingly, some of them said yes. So we'll have more guests, I think.
I was going to say, shockingly, we've got friends. That was going to be the more shocking thing to me.
I know.
It'll be nice to have a few more different voices come on for you know, random topics, and it'll be a fun thing. It's a fun thing to get people, and usually they're people in the industry who get to share some of their picks on weirdly specific themes from randomly selected themes. So
yeah, and unfortunately for me, they're all people who are much more successful than me, so you know, my ego is going to take even more of a bashing.
Best Kevin Lehan scene. That would be a short episode.
Oh, shut up, Podbot. Don't you start.
Podbot's just going to give you a thrashing this season, Kevin. Did you two fall out over the summer holidays? Did something happen there that, you know, did you try and go on holiday in a camper van or something like that? Did that get awkward?
No, what happened is that I downloaded a virus and she's just been acting up since then. And I don't know what it is, but ever since she went onto the dark web, rather than getting smarter, she's gotten stupider.
Shag off.
So.
No, I think she's just gotten sassier. That's all it is.
Fits right in.
Fits right in. I know because we didn't have an end of season spin of the wheel last season.
Last year.
Kevin, Yeah, your creative endeavors knows no bounds, because you embraced the spirit of the Euros, didn't you? When in fashioning what the topic for this episode should be, can you explain to people what it was?
I did. I went out and I rioted, and no,
put a flare up your bum. That was a weird tactic. The flare up the bum was strange, Kevin.
Well, I'm not here to kink shame anybody, especially myself. But it was a great summer. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, got the result that I was hoping for. So, you know. No, yeah, we decided to throw it back to our listeners out there who, unfortunately for them, they're on Twitter. And we asked them, what scenes would you like us to sort of tackle as our first one back this year? And they came flooding in. There were so many of them. And we whittled it down to about 30. And then we did knockouts. And it went, you know, scene by scene by scene. And will I tell you what ones were in the...
I was going to ask you, please. I'd love... I obviously voted, but I can't remember what the...
Yeah. We had some really good ones that I actually added into the wheel after this. We had like best magic scene, makeovers, F-bombs, one-liners, over-the-top acting, cameos, dogfights, car crashes, science gone wrong, kiss scenes, montages... Mm-hmm. Escape scenes, best of Ireland, best of a bad movie scene, set up payoffs, and they went over the course of a week. They got whittled down until we ended up with montage versus character intro, and intro won by about 70%. So
wow,
yeah, our first scene walked back, and I think it's a cracking topic. Wow. I had a lot of fun sort of thinking about those sort of first impressions of indelible characters, and I'm glad this one, because there were some rough ones in there, but
there really were. When this, I didn't create like multiple fake Twitter accounts so that I could like it, I didn't actually, honestly, but you know, if things were going wrong for me, I think I might have got taken that step. But yeah, I'm the same. When character intro was decided, I just went, I thought about it and went, oh no, that's actually an interesting topic. It is an interesting, and it's kind of a screenwritery topic, but we don't want to get bogged down in the, you know, in the artifice and the technicalities of being a screenwriter, but it's an important one, not an important one, but it's an interesting one to think about.
I think it is like it's a moment where screenwriters get to shine, because it's where, you know, movies today have become quite, you know, Hollywood movies, which is what we sort of like end up focusing on a lot. They're sort of special effects laden films, but like the real specialness of a script can be those great sort of like character intros and those moments that sort of flip the script and say, wait until you see this character, look what they're going to bring to the table. So
And so to get into the topic, right, we're going to dive into this headlong, because
how do you want to do it?
Just straight in there with a question first of all. Like, you know, the question first of all is, why is it important to think, you know, as a screenwriter, but like, why is a good character introduction important? And I'll give you, it's a rhetorical question. And my answer to that is basically, you know, first impressions count.
Yeah.
And
so it's not a rhetorical question. You just answered it yourself.
It is a rhetorical, that's what a rhetorical question means. I answer it myself.
Podbot, delete that. Oh no. It's Will's episode. No, screw.
Leave it in, Podbot. Leave it in.
Start as you mean to go on.
First impressions count. So it really is like, and how we introduce a character as filmmakers is, you know, really important, because we're setting out how we want an audience to feel about a character, whether it be, you know, where do we want the audience to empathize with them, whether we want them to admire them, to feel sympathy for them, which is the same as empathy, but and also another one is to feel terror towards those characters.
Yeah.
So
villains get some great introductions.
They really do. The villains get the juiciest ones. But as I started to do research on it and started to think about it and honestly started to cog from websites out there, I realized that there's loads of, you could categorize different character introductions.
Oh, here we go. We're slipping right back into season one. This is going to be another one where Will's going to give a TED talk.
TED talk time. Yep. You've come here for my episodes are the TED talk episodes. Simpler. Kevin's our artificial.
Mine are the Ned
fictional
talks.
Characters. Sorry, Podbot, you're not fictional, you're real. I know, Muddy, teasing. So basically, what I'm going to do is I'm going to break down the different types of character introductions, and I'm going to leave the last one will be, the topic from,
the big daddy
from which I will, from where I'm going to have my best character introduction. And it was really difficult because, Jesus, like, we can all think about, half a dozen cool character introductions. And you asked on Twitter, Kevin, didn't you? You asked for people's suggestions for good character intros.
Oh, I did, yeah.
Do you have any of those close at hand?
Oh my God, and they're still coming in.
Name check a few people.
Stop it, Twitter.
Right now.
Okay.
Oh Lord.
Right. So Jared Kelly, who's a writer mate of mine, he said the Brachiosaurus in Jurassic Park. Which, that's a great one, because I was thinking the T-Rex. The T-Rex really delivers. Mm-hmm. But the Brachiosaurus as well, that's sort of like, you get to see dinosaurs for the first time. And
And it's the awe. That's a cool scene, because you see their reaction before we see the dinosaur.
A really clever one is Jules and Vincent in Pulp Fiction.
So tell me again about the hash brown.
Okay, what you want to know?
Yeah, it's just legal, man, right?
Yeah, it's legal, but it ain't 100% legal. I mean, you just can't walk into a restaurant, roll the joint, and start puffing away. I mean, they want you to smoke in your home or certain designated places.
And those are hash bars.
Yeah, it breaks down like this, okay. It's legal to buy it. It's legal to own it. And if you're the proprietor of a hash bar, it's legal to sell it. It's legal to carry it, but that doesn't matter, because get a load of this, all right. If you get stopped by a cop in Amsterdam, it's illegal for them to search you. I mean, that's the right that cops in Amsterdam don't have.
Oh, man, I'm going. That's all it is to it. I'm fucking going.
No, baby, you dig it the most.
When it's, the structure is all jumbled up, so you're actually meeting them in media res. You're actually meeting them near the end of their storyline. Well, before they get killed. And actually, look, I won't read out what's on here, because I might end up preempting some of what you want to talk about. But I would say that for anyone that's listening, to go onto our Twitter feed and look up what's pinned. It'll be the top tweet. And there are some fantastic picks there. And my pick came up multiple times, which was starting to bum me out, because I thought I had to keep changing in order to come up with something interesting and not sort of be too predictable. So nobody mentioned my pick, but every other pick that I wanted to mention definitely came up more than once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I felt as well.
I'll tell you one more, actually, just because Al Horner, who is a mate of yours that you did the Script to Power podcast, which is really cool.
Yeah, great.
He mentioned a really funny podcast, one, which I know that neither of us is gonna mention. He mentioned the tyrannical Adam Scott forcing his family to perform Sweet Child of Mine in Step Brothers.
I love
that's
that one.
A great one.
Yeah.
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go. A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. Bum.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest skies as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and see it now.
Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, Alice, let's go.
Reminds me of a warm, safe
place. It's so flat. You don't even look good while you're singing. The worst thing I've ever heard. This is $1,200 a week for voice lessons, and this is what I get? Okay, I'm going to save it with the solo.
Oh, it's brilliant. It is brilliant. And it's quite catchy. Their rendition is it's quite
Steve Martin as well. Steve Martin in Little Shop of Horrors. Anytime when you've got a musical, when a character comes in and they burst into song, I mean, that is, you know, grandstanding and making a grand entrance. So musicals have a lot of great sort of character introductions, but there you go.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get into the specific topics, right? And how I found them broken down, how I've kind of tried to label them myself. And it's kind of handy. I enjoyed doing this. This was kind of a cute exercise. The first topic, you know, drum roll.
Hit me.
Drum roll.
Thank you very much. The first topic is introduction. Is what I call the tease introduction, right? And the tease introduction is where we don't see the character full on, but we see kind of close-ups of the extremities of the character, like their paraphernalia.
Like shoes getting out of a car.
There you go. The shoes or how, if, you know, like, you know, in the case of Oskar Schindler, he's kind of like, we see him laying out his suit and he's putting on his Nazi pin. And we know he's not a Nazi officer, but we see that he's a Nazi affiliate until finally he's kind of like revealed in a cool shot.
And Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I'm remembering Indy's shadow and he steps into the light. I guess that's also similar to how he's introduced in Raiders. But yeah,
that's the one I was going to bring up, the classic one where the character of Indy is always in shadow, but we see the whip, we see the hat, we see kind of close up of his hands using holding the map. And again, and when we finally see his face, he steps out of the shadow and we see his face in his cool close up on the fedora and he looks absolutely amazing.
I have a theory, right, and it is that heroes don't have the most interesting or most exciting introduction, because usually they're like setting the scene for us or setting the table for us, and it's not until other characters come in where they mix it up. So like in Terminator, you'd have like the Terminator's arriving and it's really impactful and exciting, but Sarah Connor, who's the heroine of that franchise, you just meet her driving a moped. It's really mundane and sort of like she's an ordinary girl and it's an ordinary day type thing. But the Raiders of the Lost Ark opening, that whole sequence with Indiana Jones, is one of the few ones that I can think of where the hero gets the most spectacular introduction of most heroes in movies.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because the hero of a film typically is the character that must undergo the greatest journey over the course of the story. So how we are introduced to them is different to how we leave them, and it charts their change throughout the course of the story.
That's it. There, you've just landed it, because it's the journey. You want to start off with somebody not being the most bombastic version of themselves. They have to come into their own skin. So usually heroes have a more subdued or quiet introduction, and it's the leading lady or the sidekick or the villain that have the sort of big splashy, like, wait until they get a load of me type moments.
Well, you're leading me on to the next topic,
So tease. What's your pick for that?
Well, it would be Indiana Jones, the intro for Indian Raiders.
There we go.
I know we've had Raiders, but I think you just look at those first few shots and it's a perfect example of seeing the extremities of the character, and he's all set up. And you actually also see characters watching him, you know, and I think that's really important, how we witness other people observe this character that we're curious about. It makes us lean in a little bit more.
Lean in, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, you want to have your audience lean in.
To see.
And
who is
for those
dude?
That are listening to this who haven't heard our summer audio commentaries, the Raiders of the Lost Ark audio commentary is, I think we cover a lot of that in that, don't we? I think. Mm-hmm. Give it a listen and you'll find out.
We cover a lot of things in those commentaries, Kevin.
We do. Oh my
Some
God.
Never be heard.
Nipple.
The next was flashback. Oh God. You see, what happened in those audio commentaries is that Podbot was actually on holiday.
She was.
Right? When Podbot
she
was
came
away,
back
then
for,
we got
the Princess Bride, and then she disappeared again.
I've been here the whole time.
We got wild bold in those commentaries. So listen, the next subheading is what I call the Jack in the Box introduction, right? And this is the type of character introduction which it's where, like, you know, our character, which is kind of usually that antagonistic character, a kind of a really big
agitator
in the story, springs like
catalyst,
emerges,
catalyst, screenwriting term, catalyst, the catalyst character.
Now, the thing about this is they're the Jack in the Box. They appear on screen, like, fully formed, but they appear in a surprising way. So it's not like Darth Vader, where Darth Vader comes out and you know he's a bad guy. It's like we have this character emerge and you go, who is this person? But they're fully formed. They're right there. So an example of that is like Quint in Jaws, when Quint appears at the back of the community meeting. And he just scrapes his nails across the chalkboard. We see him and we know this guy is a force of nature, but we don't know what to make of him, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a really, it's, that's why I'm calling it the Jack and Boss. He pops out of the wall and he's fully
there. Do you know
what? And it's kind of,
I
like,
can think of
Joker?
As a really good Jack in the Box sort of character that pops up. The chestburster, an alien.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally. Jack in the Box.
Yeah, he literally. And gets a similar reaction from the surrounding children. But the one I love, the kind of like the quintessential Jack in the Box character introduction that I absolutely love and have watched way too many times, was Joker, the introduction of Joker in The Dark Knight.
Three of a kind. Let's do this.
That's it. Three guys?
Two guys on the roof. Every guy gets a share. Five shares is plenty.
Six shares. Don't forget the guy who planned the job.
He thinks he can sit it out and still take a slice. I know why they call him the Joker.
So why do they call him the Joker?
I heard he wears makeup.
Makeup?
Yeah, to scare people. You know, war paint.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, yeah.
He's a fantastic, you know, he's the first character we really see. We see him from the rear, you know, the character kind of dollies in on him from the rear. And he is at the epicenter of this heist. And he is a force of nature, but we really don't know it's him until the very end or close to the very end. And
what does he say about the driver? He says something where...
It's a lot of money. If this Joker guy was so smart, he'd have had us bring a bigger car. I'm betting the Joker told you to kill me as soon as we loaded the cash.
No. I killed a bus driver.
Bus driver? What bus driver?
That's a good fantastic one. Jack in the Box. It's really good. The next subcategory. I'm
again,
going for
a villain.
Is like,
see?
Yeah, a villain. It's, again, a very strong. A very strong, bold introduction. So the
because, like, just not to go back over what you're just saying, but you think about the way that Chief Brody is introduced. He's waking up, and it's sort of like the sun never used to shine in here before. We bought the house in the fall; it's now summer, what have you. And then Quint, it's a very different energy when he enters the story. But yeah,
yeah, it's the literal record scratch. It's like he literally scratches he just stops everyone in their tracks.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's that force of nature quality, you know? It's that this person.
Nothing's
going to
be
like
the same
now
that they've entered a story.
The next subcategory that I
number
fell
three.
Upon. Yeah, we're going to rattle through
these.
These
how many are
there? Wait, no. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Nine. So that's why I'm getting through them fast. I also want room for us to chat when stuff comes up as well. But I love this one. I love this one because of my pick for this one is, you know, was almost my best bit for this whole topic. And this subcategory is iconic visual moment introductions. So what I mean by that is us seeing a character, like us literally the first time we see a character, it's an iconic image, and that you can almost like the character in some occasions has never lives up to that first introduction, and it's burned into the consciousness in some way. An example of that is the introduction of Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Up there, you. It's a shilling to tie up your boat at the dock. And I shall need to know your name.
What do you say to 3 shillings? And we forget the name.
Welcome to Port Royal, Mr. Smith.
He's standing on the mast of the sinking ship as the sinking ship just perfectly...
Do you know what my theory is?
Comes up against
that
the dock.
That introduction was so good. They made an entire franchise based on that one moment. Because, how do Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom's characters get introduced? I think it's like one of them is knocking on a door and is nervous to speak to Keira Knightley. I remember being in the cinema for that and just thinking, actually, in the moment, oh, what a fun way to introduce the character.
Yeah, and did it quite well? I think his character lived up for the rest of that film.
Absolutely, for the film. I think without that character, Pirates of the Caribbean wouldn't have become the massive franchise. And without that scene, actually.
Yeah, that scene was so iconic. It's so iconic. There's a couple of other cool examples. There's one, I think, if you think of Trainspotting, there's Renton's character introduction
which is
Ewan McGregor, where he's banging on the bonnet of the car and, you know, it's the voiceovers going. It's that image of him just like, staring into the driver's seat.
Choose life. Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a fucking big television. Choose washing machines, cars, compact displays and electrical tin openers.
Also... The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm thinking
perfect.
Tuco.
Yeah.
It's a good one. And Tuco literally... bursts out the window and there's a freeze frame and he in one hand he's holding like, you know, a chicken leg and a beer bottle, in the other hand he's got a gun and he's been shaved, so it's like conveying so much about this character in one like iconic, you know, snapshotty image, and I think it's really cool. What were you going to say there, Kev?
I was thinking of King Kong, when King Kong is introduced. Where it's that lean in and you just see this huge face. It definitely lives up to that. It's not. It wouldn't be like what you were saying, where it's so indelible and it's so iconic that the film can't live up to it. But I definitely think it does live up to that. The original.
Yeah, it really does. It absolutely does. I've actually got another one that I have to mention, and it hasn't come up in any list whatsoever, and it's a personal favorite of mine, and it's one of these visually iconic moments, and it's the introduction of Jackie Brown in Jackie Brown.
Oh, the opening credits, yeah.
And Jackie Brown, and it's the underscoring of that, but with the track 110th Street. And Jackie Brown is moving on one of those, you know, that you get in an airport, those level escalators, what are they called? Walkways?
Travelators.
You know, those things that propel you along. Travelators, there you go. And what it is we have this like tracking shot with her as she's on that travelator, and she's stationary to begin with, but her performance, she's so classy and she's so stoic, but as the credits roll,
that's the only Tarantino movie where I feel moved by it. Like, his films are usually really adrenalizing and thrilling and funny and what have you, but Jackie Brown is so tender in the moments between her and Robert Forster. That's a great introduction and a great opening credits sequence.
Yeah, like her character doesn't say anything. She's on this travelator and it's just moving along, but it tracks along with her, but you can see her mannerism change as she moves along it, from kind of like patient, but then she starts to move quickly, and there's a sense of urgency about her character, that her character is on a mission. And it's conveyed so well and so subtly. I love it.
Would you count Rita Hayworth's introduction in Gilda, you know, where they say, "Are you decent?" And she rises into shot, flicking her hair back.
Gilda, are you decent?
Me?
It's sort of like it's just that image that you just see. You still see it today, and it's influenced. Yeah. It's influenced so many movies, where you can see it in Jessica Rabbit and in Cameron Diaz's introduction in The Mask, which, you know, talk about an introduction to a movie star. That was stunning.
Again, it's one of those things that men are, a stereotype that's gone through cinema history, and in that strong male characters have usually been shown, with weapons or tools or whatever it is. And iconic female characters have always been shown, introduced wearing a towel or being sexy and seductive. And Rita Hayworth is beautiful, and she's an absolutely stunning woman. But I chose Jackie Brown because she was neither, you know, she was a woman on a mission. And it's the one that kind of like, it's a very personal one for me, but I agree with you.
I love that movie.
That is one of
those.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. But I have my pick for this subtopic, for a kind of iconic visual moment introductions, is from The Big Lebowski.
And which character?
The dude. We meet the dude, and he's in a supermarket, and he is at the milk aisle, and he literally picks up milk, looks at the date, opens it, smells it, takes a swig, and kind of just went, he's sampling it like it's champagne. You've got the narration by Podbot. What's the character's the name of the actor who plays the narrator for the Big Lebowski?
Sam Elliott.
There you go. That's the one. Thanks, Podbot. Cheers, Podbot. That's the guy.
She does have her benefits, I suppose. I'm sorry, fantastic. Podbot. I take it back.
But I love that introduction.
Now, this here story I'm about to unfold took place back in the early 90s, just about the time of our conflict with Saddam and the Iraqis. I only mention it because sometimes there's a man, I won't say a hero, because what's a hero? But sometimes there's a man, and I'm talking about the dude here. Sometimes there's a man. Well, he's the man for his time and place. He fits right in there. And that's the dude in Los Angeles. And even if he's a lazy man, and the dude was most certainly that, quite possibly the laziest in Los Angeles County, which would place him high in the running for laziest worldwide. But sometimes there's a man. Sometimes there's a man.
I love John Turturro's introduction in that film.
Yeah,
that's also that's cracking.
That's another character. That's a character introduction by Tease, where we see the kind of the extremities of him. We see him pulling up his socks. We see his, you know, that pinky nail thing he's got. You know, that kind of, he's got all the rings and
his tongue,
all the netting, and his tongue. The kind of final close up of his tongue. So that's a kind of a strong iconic thing, and. There's actually a thing in The Big Lebowski. They cut a little shot that was in the script that I loved. And when the dude eventually picks out his milk, he goes up to the checkout, and the checkout lady says, "Oh, it's 60." He's not even that. He's just writing a check for 69 cents. And, you know, he's just nice. This lazy dude. And in the script, in the script, they cut it from the film, but in the script, in the next shot, the dude is walking out to his car and he's got a baggage guy carrying the bag, carrying his brown bag of milk for him out to the car.
Another introduction by the Coen brothers would be marriage in Fargo, you know, where she's bending over and do you see something? No, just feeling a little sick. Yeah.
Oh man, it's they're fantastic. Well, they, you know, the characters just are so iconic, and so many iconic characters in all of their films. They're incredible. Shall I move on to the next subtopic in this TED Talk, Kevin?
Hit me. I'm ready for it.
The next one is character introduction through action, or in parentheses, through, you know, using that saved cat kind of like technique. So
introducing
your characters Snyder's through thing. Action. Which one is that?
Blake Snyder, the author of the Save the Cat book.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes.
He came up with the term of, well, save the cat. It basically means when you introduce your hero and they do something noble or likable. Like in the opening to Aladdin, where Aladdin is a thief and he robs this bread. And he's just about to tuck into the bread, but he sees two starving street urchins and he decides to give them the bread instead. And you think, oh, I like Aladdin. He's not just a thief. He's a nice thief. That's Save the Cat type thing. But Blake Snyder in his book mentions where Al Pacino what film is it?
Sea of Love.
Yeah, in that film where he is about to arrest a guy, but he's with his kid. And he decides not to arrest him in that moment. And that is his example of like a great Save the Cat moment where, it's an understated way of saying that the character's got decency or likability.
Yeah. And like in the example of Hellboy, I think it's Hellboy 1, Hellboy literally saves a box of kittens in like his first action scene. You go, oh, he's not a monster. He saves a box of kittens. Yeah. Like, literally saves a
Maybe
cat.
Maybe that's where Save the Cat comes from. Jeez, I haven't read that book in years.
I'd say it predates it. I'd say Save the Cat predates Hellboy. I have a feeling. I'm not sure.
I don't think it does, to be honest. But then again.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. I think Save the Cat is. Pawbot. When did Save the Cat come out?
Oh, yeah.
Save the Cat, the last book on screenwriting you'll ever need, was published in 2005. It was followed up by Save the Cat Goes to the Movies, the screenwriter's guide to every story ever told, published in 2007. And Save the Cat Strikes Back, More Trouble for Screenwriters to Get Into and Out of, published in 2009. Blake Snyder was also the screenwriter for 1994's Blank Check and the other seminal Sly Stallone classic, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. Hellboy came out in 2004.
Oh, really?
There we go.
Okay. There we go. So Sergio Leone used it for a lot of his characters, like because like a lot of his characters didn't really say that much, the Man with No Name and whatnot. But it doesn't have to work for, you know, it's not something that's necessarily applicable to just heroic characters. You can do the same thing for villainous characters where we see what bad bastards they are, you know, through their actions, or a character that's completely on his own. And the example I'm going to go for is Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dialogue. All we see is we're introduced to Daniel Plainview. But we meet him down, a mine shaft that he's, you know, dug himself, and he is determined. His determination just to find his haul, find his gold, or find his oil down there. So much so that, like, you know, when things screw up and he breaks his leg down there, he's still like, you know, his main focus is to go over and look, pick up a bit of stone and spit on it to check to see if there's gold there. Like he's just. Yeah. Driving determination to accumulate, to find this treasure is demonstrated in his action. And that's a fantastic introduction for any character. You know,
similar energy, actually, I think, to Quint. And what you're reminding me of as you're saying all that is, did you ever see the original introduction to Quint in Jaws? So his introduction, as you laid out, is him scratching the chalkboard. But do you know what his original introduction was?
Oh, remind me.
So it was actually, it would have set him up much more of a villain. And he was in a music shop where they sell instruments and they do repairs on instruments. And he's picking up piano wire, which I think is for his fishing rods. And there's a kid who is practicing on a recorder. And he's trying to play this tune. And Quint is behind him and he starts to overpower the kid by humming along. And he's getting more and more aggressively overbearing because the kid is fucking up. And the kid eventually stops. It's like, oh, wow, that is a nasty man. And it would have given you a very different idea of who he was. But they cut it.
I think I've seen that. Notice you mentioned, I was like, oh, I've seen that outtake. And I didn't know where it went in the original lineup. So that's interesting. You know, listen, it's the introduction he got was, you know, the far better introduction at the end of the day. Absolutely.
There's one, though, I want to say there, because you're talking about... Well, what was that category called?
This was kind of like introduction through action, or like the save the cat kind of category. So we see characters doing
stuff.
There's
one I think is really, really cool, and it is the introduction of a superhero. And I'll give you a guess. I'll give you 20 guesses of what it is.
Right, okay. It's not, perchance, is it the Green Lantern in... mid-2000s Green Lantern by Ryan Reynolds?
No, you've got 19 more chances. Oh, no, I'll tell you what it is. Shoot. It's actually the introduction of Wonder Woman in her origin film. Where, for the first time you see her step into her costume and become the character, and it's the first time that anyone got to see her on the big screen in that way, and she's at no man's land, and she deflects the bullet and she crosses the no man's land and leads all the guys to inspires all the guys to follow her, and it is the best scene in that film, and it's an amazing moment, and you know,
that's a cool scene. So that was the first time she was actually in full costume in that
film.
It
is. They tell her that you can't get across, and she's sort of been led this whole time by the guys, and she decides, no, I'm going to get across because there are people in danger on the other side, and she steps into, she climbs up, and faces the firing line, and it's a brilliant moment. It's a great moment, and I think it's one of the best character introductions for a superhero in all of the superheroes that we've had, all the Marvel movies, and even my beloved Superman film. I think her introduction in that film is the most kick-ass.
I was joking. I thought you were going to bring up the S-Man. And I heard that's where I assumed where you were
going. That's why I was giving you 19 guesses.
That's a cool pick. That really is. The next subcategory is, I'm calling them the scene chewer introduction. And I'm calling it the scene chewer introduction because it's basically when we have a character that bounds into the story and they are literally chewing up every bit of scenery all around them. And it's usually...
The T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Literally, too. This is the one where I actually mixed up with the Gilda reference. I think this is more of a Gilda. When Rita Hayworth shows up, she flips her hair back and she literally just eats up that scene. It's just, you know, she just commands that scene from then on. The most iconic one, of course, is from Dr. No and the, you know, absolutely iconic moment where we see Sean Connery for the first time and he says... That line.
Bond. James Bond.
Mr. Bond, I suppose you wouldn't care to raise the limit?
I have no objections.
But it's really it's a really iconic moment where once the camera, you know, once Sean Connery is on screen and he lights that cigarette, the eyes of can't remember the character's name. That's Podbot. What's the name of the lady character across from who's in the red dress?
The character is Sylvia Trench, played by Eunice Gayson and dubbed by Nikki van der Zyl. You're welcome.
Oh my God, Podbot! She's going to become another co-host. She's like,
she's a co-host. Sorry, Podbot, but I'm just this is early onset Alzheimer's. So but yeah, so this is when we have those characters that just appear and they just command our attention.
You could make a whole episode out of just introductions in the Bond franchise from the female Bond. The female Bond girls. From the Bond girls to the Bond villains and Bond himself, all the different types of Bonds. This was full of introductions. But you're reminding me, as you're talking about Sean Connery there, of a great introduction where he's present for it. And it is in The Untouchables when Andy Garcia's character is recruited into their team.
And
please don't waste my time with that bullshit.
Testing all these sort of cadets and these
young
police officers, and they're all getting overpowered by Stone. Sean Connery's sort of bluster and his bravado.
George Stone, what's your real name?
That is my real name.
Now, what was it before you changed it?
Giuseppe Petri.
Jeez, I knew it. That's all you need, one thief and whop on the team.
What's that you say?
I said that you're a lying member of a no-good race.
And Andy Garcia pulls his gun and points it at Sean Connery's neck.
It's much better than you stinking Irish pig.
Oh, I like him.
And Sean Connery then melts into a smile. It's like, that's a great introduction for Andy Garcia's character, but also that's just a great scene in itself.
Yeah, a film that I'm so conflicted by has just so many great scenes, and that is definitely...
That's probably a good way to put it. It's a film of great moments, but whether it all coalesces into a great, it's still a great fun watch, but it does have its flaws.
I know, like, I've got a couple of more scene tours, but the last one, I know you'll definitely respond to the last one. Another example of a scene tour, and usually, you know, in the early days, this is what I was saying about, like, where we see attractive men and attractive women, but it's not just isolated that. But one, certainly a very attractive woman, was the introduction of the character Lisa Freeman in Rear Window, played by Grace Kelly.
Right.
When we see her, when James Stewart's lying in his wheelchair and he's just kind of coming out of his slumber, and there, Grace Kelly, Lisa, just appears in front of him in, like, you know, soft focus, and she's the most beautiful thing that's probably ever committed to celluloid. And she kisses him.
How's your leg?
It hurts a little.
And your stomach?
Empty as a football.
And you love life?
Not too active.
Anything else bothering you?
Mm-hmm. Who are you?
Reading from top to bottom. Lisa. Carol. Fremont.
And she's filling the frame, and it's just...
Beautiful.
It's a real...
He had a great way, though, like, he loved his Hitchcock blondes, and he would photograph them, you know, lovingly, almost, you know...
Yeah. Too much. Yeah, he went a bit too far. Yeah.
But, you know, Kim Novak has got a great introduction as well in Vertigo, and he had a knack for directing that Hitchcock fella.
The other one, so another scene tour, but which also kind of goes into a kind of our villain territory, which isn't like, you know, the gorgeous man or woman, is, of course, Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds, where as soon as he's terrifying.
Came up in Best Monologues.
Most of that scene, it did, and it's the second Tarantino character here. And he has that long monologue, but he literally commands that entire space and commands that entire scene, and he's also a villain. But my personal pick... And this is a very, very subjective personal pick for favorite scene, sure scene, is Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China, played by Kurt Russell.
Just listen to the old Pork Chop Express and take his advice on a dark and stormy night, all right? When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye and he asks you if you've paid your dues. Well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
And I love Jack Burton's introduction in Big Trouble in China. He's driving on his big rig truck through a stormy highway or freeway, and he is literally chewing a foot and a half long sub sandwich while with sunglasses on in the torrential rain, and he's just talking down the CB radio to whoever is listening to him, and he's just telling his story and he's taking chomps. He's fantastic. And it's just the way he delivers his lines. I love him.
It's so good. Can I tell you that my pick, actually, because you've teed me up now, is another Kurt Russell film. And it's another Kurt Russell character. I was torn between one or the other. But I think I can tell you both now and give you my pick for if I was doing this episode. It's going to be one of these two. Actually, you can decide what one you think is the better. But it's I love the sort of the stealthy setup and payoff type introduction where Kurt Russell in The Thing, his introduction in that, he's playing chess and he loses to the computer and he's keeping himself isolated from all the other guys, and he's the hero that gets this sort of great introduction out of all these other sort of nondescript characters. He's playing chess, he loses, and he pours his drink into the hard drive and says,
bitch.
And what I love about that is at the very end of the movie of The Thing is when Keith David arrives after disappearing for the climax, and neither of them trust each other. Nobody trusts anyone in that film. And Kurt Russell, in his final act, you know, inverting or calling back to his introduction, he offers Keith David his drink, his bottle of whiskey. And we know that they're not supposed to swap anything with any sort of DNA in it. So spoons or bottles or anything like that, they shouldn't swap them. And Keith David knows that as well. But he accepts the bottle and drinks from it, which suggests that he has no fear of being infected because he's the thing. And Kurt Russell laughs. And that is his final sort of moment in that movie. And I just love his introduction for how it pays off at the end, even though this is just me reading it that way, because they've never confirmed whether Keith David is the thing, but I think he is. So I love that. That was going to be my pick, but then because that reminds me so much of Tremors, I was also going to go that direction, because Tremors is opens with Kevin Bacon sleeping in the back of a pickup truck on the cliff where the movie ends. And spoilers for this film, Earl, you know, Val and Earl pees over the side of the cliff where they're going to send the monsters hurtling to their death at the very, very end. And he wakes up Kevin Bacon by shaking the pickup truck and saying, "Stampede." And you get to know these two guys that have a plan to sort of leave the small town. But the film ends with that plan coming to fruition, which is that they cause a stampede to send the grabber off the cliff where he was peeing off. And I just love how neatly the story sort of wraps up, where it's how the movie opened and how we got to meet these two characters is also how they close up the story. So, yeah.
Class.
Great character introductions and also great setups and payoffs. Yeah. Stealthy setups and payoffs.
Very good.
Although you got that backwards, you idiot. It is Fred Ward who plays Earl who is woken up, not Kevin Bacon. You call yourself a film fan. Unbelievable.
Thanks, madam. So
that's, thank God she's there to save our butts again. Now, my next subtopic is the one we have to do the least amount of talking on, because this subcategory is basically terrifying badass introductions category, where we have our very clear villain comes into the film and is very clearly villainous and is supposed to be scary and dominant and terrifying. And of course, the most iconic introduction of any villain character in in cinema in a long time is Darth Vader's introduction in New Hope, when he boards Tantive IV, the blockade runner. That's has Princess Leia, and you know, he has the stormtroopers ahead of the white stormtroopers ahead of him, the door, you know, and he's coming through the walks through the smoke, and in the next shot he's choking a guy. And it's just a triumph of production design and costume design, and those are really the things that sell that character, that costume, and you know, all that production design is amazing.
Do you think he has a better character introduction in Rogue One?
Oh, right.
He just arrives at the very, very end, yeah, and he basically just unleashes fucking bloody fury on
you know what? All the... I like that.
Yeah.
I like that scene. I really did.
Can I tell you what my one would be for a villain?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Come on. It's got to be the Borg Queen in Star Trek First Contact.
Oh,
which
okay.
was the most expensive sequence in that whole film. They spent millions on that sequence of her head descending from the rafters with her spine hanging out.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready?
Who are you?
I am the Borg.
That is a contradiction. The Borg have a collective consciousness.
It's not just her, it's like her upper, kind of upper part of her torso as well. Like, you know,
she's talking the whole while.
Wow.
And it descends.
Oh, yeah.
In and the spine that's locks cool. into place, and the suit hooks in. And you're like, ooh, shit. We've got a new, we've got a new villain in town. And I thought that's a great sort of villainous introduction.
Star Trek, like, made its own alien queen, the Borg queen, you know, taking a leaf out of the Alien franchise book, but that's really cool.
Yeah, I love it.
Another terrifying villain intro is from Fritz Lang's silent movie, M, which is really class. And if you haven't seen it, it's an amazing film. It's basically about a child killer is on the loose around this German town and has been marked by a blind man. But when we're introduced to him, we see a lovely, innocent girl just bouncing a ball along the street. And she comes up to a kind of a poster on a wall, which reads like, you know, the murderer has wanted any information on the capture of a murderer. Well, you know, there'll be a reward for it. And she's bouncing the ball against this sign. And over the word murderer, a shadow appears of a man with a hat, and he's going,
"Du hast aber einen schönen Bein."
And it is chilling. Yeah. The film is 90 years old, and it is an absolute cracker. So that's a really good villain introduction. And I don't think we, you know, the idea with that is to elicit just terror in the audience, for the audience to feel absolutely,
would you
know,
count
shit in their
John
pants.
Doe's introduction in Seven as fitting into that category?
No, I have, that'll be my next category.
Oh, okay. There we
that's
go.
Going to be, yeah, go. I have one. Roll on. That's the next category.
Was it five?
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. So the next, no, we're well down the road. We're actually only three left to go. So the next category is the long awaited reveal of a character, and this is usually when we are when this the film builds an awful lot of its narrative around the myth of a specific character. So in the example you just said, the myth of John Doe, where Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman are detectives hunting down the serial killer, and all of a sudden he defies expectations and just appears at the police station, and it's a fantastic introduction.
Yeah, it's great.
It really is. Yeah, and he's just there, standing there, just kind of almost nondescript man. And he's wearing a white shirt, which is covered in blood. And he's got plasters or bandages on each of his fingers, which is he's been slicing off
his finger. His fingerprints.
Brilliant.
After this, I'm
Detective.
Gone.
No big surprise.
Detective!
You're looking for me.
Hey! Don't you fucking move. On the fucking floor. Get away from him! On the fucking floor!
I know you.
Now! Get out! Get down! On your stomach, you piece of shit! Now! All the way! All the way, fucker! Down! Faster! Faster! Faster, fucker! Now! Toes on the ground! Jesus Christ! The fuck is this?
I'd like to speak to my lawyer, please.
God damn it!
Absolutely brilliant. And it's a great way of, if you need to build, it's basically building the myth of a character for to kind of like to hinge the narrative around in your film. Like, for example, like Bill and Kill Bill is a perfect example.
Oh yeah. I can't remember how he's introduced, because they do sort of what you were saying about sort of seeing his extremities, where you just get to hear his voice, where she says, "It's your baby," and he shoots her in the head.
Yeah, and he's only talked about, like, we really just learn about him from how the other characters relate to, just talk about him, not even to him, because he's just... He's the weight of his character has such gravity for all of the other characters in this universe that he's clearly quite a powerful thing.
Oren Ishii as well. Lucy Liu's character introduction in that is fantastic.
That's a really cool one. That's a really cool one. Harry Lime in The Third Man is another one.
That's like, I saw that come up on Twitter.
A very classic one. But the one I went for the long-awaited reveal for me has to be one of my favourite horror thrillers, Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs, where
he's standing in the glass cell.
Yeah, but it's about this sort of introduction is about basically how the other characters talk about Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah,
how, like, you know, the detective chief is saying Hannibal Lecter is like, you know, he did this to his own, he did this to another, you know, psychiatrist for, you know, insulting him slightly. And even the guy who's running the institution is warning her about Hannibal Lecter. And as we're going down there, there's the mythology of Lecter is established within the four walls of this film. Like, you know, he kind of comes in, not very late, not as late as John Doe, but certainly well into the second act.
He's only got about 12 minutes of screen time in that whole film.
Yeah, yeah. But he carries, his character is it's mythological, you know. He's a mysterious character, and he's almost like, he's almost, you know, unhuman.
Dr. Lecter, my name is Clarice Starling. May I speak with you?
You're one of Jack Crawford's, aren't you?
I am, yes.
May I see your credentials?
Certainly.
Closer, please. Closer.
Kind of like a Kaiser Soze kind of character as well, where you go, he's this guy's a spectre. I think Kaiser Soze falls into this as well. From The Usual Suspects.
Meh.
So I know you're not gone. but anyway, it's falling to that. So that's a different, you know, it's utilized again. It's
I am so curious where you're gonna go with this, because you're knocking down so many that people brought up on Twitter here.
I've only two categories left. I don't know how long I've been doing this, but I've only two categories left, right? This next one, in the second, the penultimate one, is the slow, tension-filled introduction of a character in one shot, right? So it's really, it's one shot, and it's where the characters are teeny, tiny, tiny little figures, and they slowly, slowly, and it's a really long take, and the character comes into frame. So before we, what would be your pick for that one?
Well, there's one iconic one, and I don't know. I assume you're gonna say,
I'll say the iconic one.
Say what it is.
Well, Omar Sharif, Sharif Ali's character in Lawrence of Arabia.
Is that your pick?
That would be my pick. My that perfect is, example of that.
And the fact that they did that in camera. There's no trickery with camera. That. That's Oh my god! And so good. My pick would be the introduction of Javier Bardem's character in Skyfall.
Good one. That's on my list. Great one. That's
it
really
is good.
Yeah.
Rats in a barrel.
Yeah. Yeah. And he starts off, it's all that one, like, he's really far away down this large building and this room, and he just keeps approaching us until he's really close into the camera. And it's kind of terrifying, because there's nothing to stop him.
He plays such good
villains. Towards us.
And he's got a great introduction in another Coen Brothers film. They're becoming like our Spielberg and James Cameron guys, where they just keep popping up.
Yeah. Yeah.
No Country for Old Men.
The Lawrence of Arabia one, like, still to this day is damn stunning, because, as you said, it's all in camera. And, like, when you're looking, it's Peter O'Toole is, like, out in the desert with a guide, and he's just parched, and he's, you know, he's desperately needs water, and they're at a well, and in the horizon, all we see is this dot, and you'd almost think it was like Luke's speeder in Star Wars, the first one, because, you know, the horizon line is all, you know, vanished, and, you know, you know it's, what's the word?
Who
is he? The mirage kind of effect has kicked in. And he just keeps coming towards us. As he keeps coming towards us, like, he gets a little bit closer, like a steady charge towards us. All of a sudden, he shoots the guys.
Tapas!
So Peter O'Toole's going, what the fuck? And this, we do not know who this character is at all. And then at the end, he says,
he's dead.
Yes. Why?
This is my well.
I have drunk from it.
You are welcome.
Would you count the introduction of harmonica of in Once Upon a Time in the West as sort of fitting that category?
Yeah.
It's like a long, long, long take. And the train goes by,
yeah,
and then you get to see Charles Bronson. And he has an iconic line of, you know, where they're taking the piss and saying, they've only got three horses and there's four guys. It's like, looks like we're down a horse. Yeah.
Looks like we're... looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
So good.
That is amazing. It really is. And that would kind of like fall into, again, like, it's a good example of a character introduction through action as well. And it's like, that just falls into several categories because it's just so bloody fantastic. It really
I have
is.
Two kids films and, to mention because I'm reading Twitter here as you're saying all that. And is there a category where they would fit in? Should I hold back or should I tell you no?
There is one final category.
Oh, okay.
And,
well, I'll tell you.
Right.
Go on. What's the final category?
The final category, and this is the category from which I'm going to pick my favourite introduction, character introduction. This is what I call the reversal of expectation, right? And it's basically where you have an expectation about a character, and when we actually meet that character, it's subverted. So it's usually played for comedic effect, like, you know, for example, in The Pink Panther, when we finally meet Professor Clouseau, we're expecting to meet this incredible detective.
Genius.
And in actual fact, quite clear quickly, he's a buffoon, and it's like, oh, he's not this great detective. Another example is in Amadeus. We hear all about Mozart, and when we finally get to meet Mozart, he's this kind of
rascally,
like childish, rascal underneath a table chasing a girl trying to get up her skirt, you know, completely subverting that expectation.
But instantly humanizing him as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's subverting our expectations, and it draws us into that character even more. And this is going to be the one where I'm going to have my best pick from the reversal of
expectation. Hold it for a second. Build anticipation.
Right.
I'll tell you, just because I'm scanning Twitter, two great kids film introductions. Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story.
Star Command, come in. Do you read me?
Why don't they answer?
My ship!
Blast. This'll take weeks to repair.
Buzz Lightyear mission log, stardate 4072. My ship has run off course en route to Sector 12. I've crash-landed on a strange planet. The impact must have awoken me from hyperspace.
Yes,
well, it's flipping all over the place, and it's you get to see the bravado and the delusion of that character. It's so fun, and instantly you're like, okay, this movie has kicked up a gear. Buzz Lightyear's here. And the other one is the opening to The Goonies, where you get to meet all the different characters in this sort of little vignettes as they're going about their day, with Data doing his gadgets and Andy doing her cheerleading and great.
You kind of, again, you're seeing all the characters in action. You're seeing them do their kind of like their trait, their character trait. And we go, oh, that's, and Chunk is eating food or whatever it is. Or like presses up against the window and squirts, you know, milkshake
Richard
everywhere.
Richard Donner, R.I.P.
That's a really cool one. Oh, miss you, Richard Donner. He's a great guy. No, I'm so glad because I was nervous there. I was like, oh God, my pick's going to be said here, but it wasn't. So my favorite pick and my favorite character introduction is a very, like all of these picks, we're not saying this is the best, you know, objectively, this is completely subjective. And my
I have no idea what you're going to pick here.
I love it when you do not know, genuinely do not know. But it's from the subcategory of the reversal of expectation. And it comes from a film that is now, I suppose, considered to be quite old. And it's
from the 90s.
From the 90s, back when we were young. It is from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And it is the introduction of Willy Wonka, Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka.
Oh, not Johnny Depp.
No, that was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I love this introduction because for the first, first act of that film, we have, again, we're building up the mythology. This is kind of plays on a couple of ideas. The mythology of Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, but playing up the mythology of him as a character as well. And everyone, the whole world is just manic to get these golden tickets to finally get into the factory. The mythology of the factory is opening in. But then when all the tickets have been gathered and all those kids are outside the gate from all over the world, everyone, the world's press have their cameras pointed at the door of Wonka's factory. And then when the bells strike, the door opens and out comes this frail man. He looks kind of gaunt.
Oh, yeah, that's
frail.
Right. Yeah, I get you now.
Yeah, man.
You're bringing it back.
And he starts hobbling along on his walking cane along the red carpet. And everyone's a little bit nervous. Everyone's just kind of like going, oh, God, he's not exuberant and he's not whatever. And just as he gets to the end of the red carpet and the gates are opened, he puts his walking stick into the cobblestones and his walking stick gets stuck in the cobblestones and he takes a couple of more steps forward and he realizes that his walking stick isn't there and all of a sudden he kind of like tilts forward as if he's going to fall and instead he does this somersault roll and he just stands and pulls his hat
proper
out.
Proper circus sort of
himself.
Reveal.
So gone. It's brilliant. It is brilliant.
It is. That's a great film as well, and it holds up so well.
Thank you. Welcome, my friends. Welcome to my chocolate factory. Would you come forward, please?
Yeah, man. And I love that pick because was a brilliant... Yeah, I love that pick. But no, I love the decisions that were made in that. And the decision of doing the somersault was Gene Wilder's, because he had gotten the script. He'd gotten the script and, you know, I was really interested in doing it. But he said, you know, when Wonka comes out, I want him to do this gag. And when pushed by Mel Stewart, the director, because it was adapted from Roald Dahl's book, and I think he wrote the screenplay as well. But when Mel Stewart pushed him, he's like, why do you want to do that? Gene Wilder's response was, he said, well, if I do that, then for the rest of the film, the audience doesn't know what to expect from Wonka.
There you go.
If he's telling the truth or if he's lying. And for the rest of the film, you don't know if he's dangerous or if he's a psychopath or if he's got a big heart. It's brilliant. All from that one action. Excuse me for clicking my fingers. From that one action, it creates mystery and doubt, not only in the audience's mind, but in the character's mind. We are in the same shoes as the character in that film. And it doesn't quite work. It doesn't work at all in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, in my opinion. But in that film, it's just perfectly executed. And it creates a riveting character for the rest of that film that we just don't know if he's dangerous or if he's good. And it creates, it's just one of the great, you know, family films that was ever made. So that, Kevin, was my best character introduction scene, which is Willy Wonka, Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka and Willy Wonka in Chocolate Factory.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
What do you think of that, Podbot?
That's the great pick. I love that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right. Didn't expect to say that.
That is great. And I think that's a great introduction to us as well for season two, because my pick would have been from a horror movie starring Kurt Russell, John Carpenter's The Thing, and yours was mm-hmm. a children's fantasy, feel-good comedy.
Horror. it's kind of got psychedelic horror bit moments in there,
well,
too.
Well, you could say the same thing about The Thing. Got some great moments in there. But there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think we're back, baby.
Episode one in the can. Thank God for that.
And that was the... Well, that's the end of our first episode and of season two. But we have business at hand, and that business is... figuring out what, Kevin, you've got to do next week for your topic. And
I can already sense the satisfaction in your voice that you got that over with, and now you get to like throw it to me.
Yeah. It is a joyous moment to be the person spinning the wheel. It really is. I do love it. It is great. And but do you know what? It's actually great because I genuinely enjoyed going, oh, character, that was a fun topic to cover and think about. But what we're going to do, Kevin, shall you explain to the audience and to me exactly what we're doing this with the wheel right now?
So the wheel in the first season was 300 different scene topics. We spin it and whatever comes up, we then tackle it next week. And there was a veto in there as well, which you got last year. Mm-hmm. And you used that veto to get rid of torture porn scene.
God, thank God.
That would have been a funny episode as well. But this year we've got some other elements, which is like we can double spin it, we can spin it together, we can trade based on what you get and what I get, we can kick it down the can. There are lots of like different elements that we can get more into once we sort of figure it out more precisely. But I think just to give it a little bit of novelty for this episode, I reckon what you can do is you can double spin it. And you can give me a hint on what topic comes up for each spin. And then I'll decide based on that. So let's see if that makes life more interesting or if it makes it more long-winded.
Oh, I think it just makes life easier on you compared to me being at the mercy of the Twitter folk.
Exactly. Kind of go, it's my way of getting to see what my options are before I get the...
Yeah. Oh, well, look, we'll give it a go.
That sounds like you're making it easier for yourself, cheater.
Shut up, Podbot. I'm not cheating. This is for the audience.
You're right, Podbot. You're right.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I'm going to spin it the first time. Okay, here we go. And it's spinning. And just spinning around.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. So... I'm seeing the topic now, so I'm not going to tell you the topic, but I have to give you
a clue.
Hint.
Yeah, give me a clue.
Okay, so... my clue... I'm I have to think about this. Okay, so my clue is... First is worst, and second is best.
As in, like, the... Okay, as in, like, a race thing? First is worst, second is best, third is the one with the hairy chest?
Exactly. That's it.
Okay.
But you don't have time to dwell on that because I have to spin it again. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Everyone, spinning again.
We've already done chasing.
We've already done chasings. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And next one is. So I see what the topic is. Okay. Right. The problem is here is I have to come up. I have to do extra thinking on this, and I'm not good at that in this at this late tonight. Okay. Here's your hint.
It's 4 a.m.
This is your hit, Kevin. The bigger they come, the harder they fall.
Okay. What the fuck does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. Is it a boxing movie?
The bigger
movie?
They come, the harder
you can't
they
tell
fall.
Me. Okay.
It could be. It could be about diets and...
Okay.
So first of the worst, second
what?
Is the best.
I am going to say, Podbot, I've been slightly rude to you. You can make it up to me right now. Pick... one of those two and make it good.
Seeing as I know what both of them are, I would choose the second one. It suits you.
Actually, no, I don't want to do that one. I'm going to go with the first one. best. Second is the
first
best.
First is the worst. Best
second
is the best.
Give me that one. Well, fuck that, off, Podbot.
So that
I don't
one is...
trust you at all. You basically just told me that was the hard one.
You are such a langer.
Okay. The first one.
That topic, Kevin, is best sequel reboot scene. So I'm assuming that's like a sequel that's also a reboot.
Like soft
so
reboots?
Best sequel reboot. Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is. I think that's what it is.
Okay,
so we're
I
talking
can work
like
with that. I can work with that.
Star Wars Episode 7 is a kind of, I suppose that's a sequel.
What was the other one, actually? Can you tell me what the other one was now?
Oh, the other one was best monster scene.
Oh, that's good. So yeah. No, I'm happy with what I got. Because we've done we've done SFX. Good. So, yeah, okay. Best sequel. Yeah. Sequel what? Sequel...
Sequel reboot scenes. So we kind of haven't. So that's a kind of specific. Yeah, there's a specific number of films that fall into that category. So.
And I think I'll try and rope in a guest for that. I'll see. Well, don't leave this in, because maybe they'll say no. But right. Okay. Best sequel reboot scene. That's actually delicious because it's the second episode back on the second season. Sequels.
Yeah.
Happy with that.
Great. Kevin, where can people find you?
They can find both of us, I think, on Twitter under at Best Bits Pod, and both our handles are on there. How's that? Streamlined for you.
That's the one. That's the one. And we're also on Letterboxd, but that's still a thing under construction. And Facebook somewhere as well. So you can look at Facebook if you wanted to, if anyone. That's the thing that's still out there.
It is.
But, yes, that's
episode
great.
One down. Oh my god.
Hey, season 2.
Season 2.
I'm delighted. And everyone, listen, thanks again for all of the ratings and the wonderful reviews on the Apple and all your podcasters. Please keep hitting 5 stars on Apple and recommending us. That's how we can continue to grow. We started off at the start.
Will's
going,
kids
why
will lose
would
respect
you want...
him if he doesn't get 5 stars off the internet.
Will's kids
you're
never
so
had
used to just getting 5 stars constantly for all your bloody writing work. So
I just want to be cool with the kids. That's all I want to be for once in my life. It's as simple as that. And
never gonna happen.
Yeah. Tragic. All right. Come here.
Loved it.
That was
that
great.
Was great.
Thanks.
We're back.
All right. Yeah. Best sequel reboot scene next week.
Love it.
Good luck.
That wasn't too bad now, was it? Back next week.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff.
If you have any notes, comments, scene suggestions, or just want to get in touch with us, email us at bestbitspodcast@gmail.com.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Mini Bits.
Another new episode.
Tuck a D, stupid puns.
Patreon podcast.
Of this Patreon podcast. Exclusive.
Exclusive.
The Best Bits podcast with Will and Ken. Bonus content for you. This is for you, not for them, just for you. The Best Bits podcast with Will and Kevin. Exclusive content. You're on the talking film session. The Best Bits podcast. This is for you.
Kevin, how are you?
Hi, honey. How are you?
Oh, you know, I've got my corns sorted out. I went to the chiropodist the other day and she
Your
said...
Your corn?
My corns. Did you ever get corns?
No.
Did you know what a corn is?
Yeah, it's a bunion on your foot, isn't it?
Yeah, like in between your toes, stuff like that.
Do you not wear any shoes like around the house? You walk
around
barefoot?
No, I wear... No, it's the opposite.
GA shorts.
It's the opposite. I wear incredibly tight shoes. Like those Chinese women.
Oh,
who get their feet bound, who had their feet bound, like, you know, before the turn of this last century. And so they had incredible corns and bunions. This is a great opener for a Mini Bits episode where we get people disgusted.
Squally, it's episode 73 of the Mini Bits. I'm Kevin, you're Will. This is our Patreon podcast. Thank you to all our lovely patrons. Yeah. A few of you have jumped in recently. I don't know what we said. We try to goad people into joining up every single episode. And then every so often, it's like a lot of people join because of one specific episode. And yeah. I'm like, what did we, how did we say it? What did we say on that episode? It's different to the other 270 episodes.
Maybe it didn't sound as desperate. Maybe we said, don't join. Maybe reverse psychology. That's how we should do it. Reverse psychology. Don't join up to our patron. Don't.
Cancel. Everybody cancel.
You don't deserve to be in this group. We don't want you. We don't like the look of you.
We don't need anybody.
It's just us. It's absolutely just us. Hey, should we tell you, we did, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't say it on mic, especially so early. We did an interview with the Irish Examiner last Friday.
We did?
Yeah.
And
How do you think I did?
I think you did all right. Like, you didn't interrupt me once, so I was delighted with how I came across. But, you know, there's no sort of time limit on this. We don't know when it's going to get posted. One of our friends was saying, Kathy at the cinema was saying that their interview with, did they do the Examiner as well? It was six months before it posted.
And the Guardian, I'm pretty sure. They were profiled in the Guardian as well.
Yeah, but we don't do any really promotion. Like, we don't do anything.
Well, this is our first time getting any sort of like proper coverage, which is going to be mad. So listen to all you listeners who have found us before we explode. You're an OG. You're an OG listener before Kevin starts getting gold chains from all his Patreon dash.
I think I'm more of a silver than a gold. I think my undertones suit more silver. But
I just want to die.
Goes with Prince Albert.
Your hat?
Yeah.
I want one of those diamond studs in my tooth. That's all I want. So I can go bing whenever I'm on a call.
Oh, yeah.
Bing.
I usually just, you know, wink and that glints.
Yeah.
Like a starlight twinkle.
Speaking of which, I interrupted you. What did you want to speak of? Which?
Start the timer.
Oh! I forgot.
You may as well.
Start the timer.
All these lucky losers are listening in and they're wondering, what are we going to be talking about? But we have to start talking about them after.
Yeah.
We say goodbye. But look, I wanted to talk to you about, you've seen a few things. You've seen the new Godzilla film.
Yes.
I've seen the first Omen. I saw Scoop as well.
We're looking Netflix forward to watching this. We already see, okay.
Okay. I'll save my thoughts. And what else did I see? I made notes, but sure, it doesn't really matter.
I think I saw it.
And I was going to go through all the summer releases and see what takes your fancy.
Okay. I'm looking forward because I don't actually know what's on the horizon. So,
The Joker 2 trailer came out today.
I saw it. Yes, I watched that.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of Chicago.
Yeah, it's kind of like you see it's all very much in the mind's eye. They're calling it a jukebox musical. Am I right in saying that?
I think you're right in saying that.
So, look, hey, listen. What it did remind me of was that I want to rewatch The Joker because I saw it in the cinema and I thought it was fine. It was kind of a bold new direction.
I'm just going to go back and watch the episodes from the Batman 66 show, the Joker episodes.
Oh, yeah, that's going
to
be...
Just to fill me in, like, on the lore. You know, get up to speed.
Get you right up to speed. And you'll be there going, where are all the guys in the purple suits with the masks? When are they going to show up? And like,
it's a bit of a weird time though, where we have the Penguin TV show with Colin Farrell coming out, which is a totally different canon version of the Penguin. Then you have this offshoot of Joker, which is in its own universe entirely.
Mm.
And then you have the old Batman films that you can watch.
Right.
And, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's just, I don't know. I'm kind There's of so many IP.
But like,
it's just everywhere.
What's happened is the world, the comic book world, has very much entered the film world. It's where you could have different runs, totally different runs of a character by it's different insane. Authors. And there would be totally different riffs on it and stuff. Oh, this is insane. The thing. Kevin, so I'm only catching up on this. You mentioned it to me on a podcast. Was it on one of those?
It was the last mini bits.
You said everyone's describing stuff as insane recently.
And have you started noticing it though?
Only with people trying to rise you. That's the only place where I've noticed people on Discord are trying to rise you.
Oh my God. I could start posting now, like, tweets, comments, TikToks, articles, anything. Insane is everywhere. This is insane. That's insane. It's insane. There was a festival just going on about this insane lineup. Okay. I was like, oh, it's a mentally ill lineup. Okay. It's just, it's everywhere. And the other thing, do you know the other thing that's also bothering me lately?
Wow.
And this has been bothering me for years and years and years. It used to be that everyone used to misspell definitely. They'd go defiantly.
Okay.
Oh, it's defiantly whatever. It would just, they're morons. But no, I just keep noticing everyone keeps spelling a lot as one word. A-L-O-T. A lot. Where have they gotten into their heads that a lot is one word? It's the same way that people will write every time as one word.
What's the one that you've pulled me up on a few times and I can't get it right? Compliment.
Compliment.
I can't, but I can't get it right. It's like the
I. You can, because I told you the other day.
Yeah, and I went searching for it and I couldn't find it because I had to actually had to use it.
If there's an I in compliment, it's I'm paying you a compliment.
That's a good way to remember it. Okay, good. And then compliment.
I wrote that to you.
But you did, and I went to try and find it because I found myself writing the word compliments. And I went, shit, Kevin.
But you gave me a thumbs up, which meant in my world that, yeah, I read that. Thanks.
But I did, right? I'm talking about a couple of days later when I was faced with the exact same hurdle of writing the word compliment. I went, okay, what did Kevin say again about compliment? There's an I and the E. What did he say? So I went searching for it and I found it, I think. And I went, oh, the I is paying me a compliment or I'm giving you
it's
a compliment.
It's insane how little you can retain information. It's insane.
Come here, let's start talking about what we watched. Come on.
Did you start the timer?
Yeah, it's gone. It's ticking. It's ticking down. The world's going to explode.
You know, I have to put in the sound effect. I have to line up all my sound effects.
When you said start the timer,
I have a whole fucking, I have a whole soundboard. Okay. Jesus Christ, where's my fucking,
what?
Where's my ding dang ding?
Here we go. The timer has started. There we go.
There we go. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Right.